Hello, I'm Kyle Caldwell, and this is On The Money, a weekly look how to get the best out of your savings and investments. In this episode, I'm speaking to a fund manager to examine whether a certain area of the stock market is a bubble that could one day pop. And that area is companies benefiting from the obesity drugs trend, an area within the pharmaceutical sector that's been booming over the past year to 18 months. To find out whether this area of the market is potentially looking overvalued, I spoke to Elza Craig, fund manager of the International Biotechnology Trust, IBT is the ticker. To kick off, Elza, could you firstly set the scene in explaining why these anti-obesity medications have led to some eye-catching share price performances of late, including the fact that we saw Danish company Novo Nordisk leading the way to become Europe's most valuable company at the end of January?
Absolutely. So taking a step back, the history of what's happened in this space is that originally this peptide, GLP-1, was used to treat diabetic patients. What they saw from the diabetic patients was significant weight loss. So they've repurposed the drug and used it now for obese and overweight patients. Something else that happened along the way is, interestingly, a peptide hormone from a unique lizard called the Gila lizard was seen to have a longer acting efficacy and approach to the traditional GLP-1 hormones. And so that was used to allow patients to have a once weekly injection. So using both those facts together, in 2021, the first GLP-1 was approved for obesity. This drug was called Wegovy from Novo, as you mentioned. Since then, however, last year, we saw a clinical trial called SELECT. And that trial showed that this drug not only caused weight loss, but it basically saved lives. So it had a significant reduction in cardiovascular events for these patients. That was a bit of a game changer. Because what that meant was society could justify reimbursing these drugs. It wasn't just seen as a lifestyle drug. It was seen as something that could benefit society as a whole. So all of that taken into account, you've got a big market. So step sideways, how big is that market? Well, over 50% of the world's population are going to be obese or overweight by 2035. Right now, 1 billion people are obese or overweight. These numbers are just astronomical. In America, say at the moment, 50 million people get treated with these GLP-1s. Estimate it costs $10,000 a year. That bill will be $500 billion. And that bill equates to the whole of the branded pharmaceutical market, all drugs. So these numbers are big, and that's why you're seeing big valuations for Novo and Lilly, the two companies that have approved GLP-1, Lilly's drugs, actually a combination of mechanisms, GLP-1, GIP, on the market to treat these patients. So lots of things have happened, and we're seeing those valuations reflecting that market size. Now, the sell side analysts have estimates of peak sales between 50 billion a year to 150 billion a year. What's putting a lid on that number? It's supply. So as much as there's huge demand, and I'm sure you would have heard of people willing to pay for this out of pocket, these companies need to manufacture the peptides. And peptides aren't like small molecule drugs. It takes time, it takes effort, it's a big project. And Lilly and Novo have recently announced a combined number of something like 50 to 60 billion put aside for CapEx to make manufacturing plants to make this stuff. So it's big.
And those two companies you mentioned, Novo and Lilly, are they the only two companies that have been benefiting from this trend? Or are there others in the sector? Or has there also, by extension, been a bit of a rising tide?
Yes, it's a fascinating question. At the moment, there are three drugs approved for obesity. Two of those drugs, Wegovy and Zepbound, are Lilly and Novo's, and they are the dominating obesity drugs because they work best. However, hot in the heels, you have various different biotech companies trying to chase this market, which is totally understandable. You're going to expect that. This is positive in the future because hopefully it would address supply issues and also pricing issues and, to an extent, compliance issues. So at the moment, we're seeing this as an injectable drug, but in the future, some biotech companies and Lilly and Novo themselves are looking into oral options for patients. Also trying to combine different mechanisms, as Lilly has done so far with GIP plus GLP-1, to address or mitigate or lessen the side effect profile from the GLP-1s. New mechanisms like amylin or glucagon, cannabinoid antagonists, which is, if you know about the side effect of marijuana, is to have what's called munchies. This is an antagonism of that. So it's the opposite of munchies, could maybe reduce appetite. So all of these different mechanisms are trying to chase this massive market. And they're generally the smaller biotechy names. So the names we've mentioned so far in this podcast are Lilly and Novo. And those are big pharmaceutical companies. Whereas companies like Amgen and Structure and Zealand, they're more sort of emerging pharma or biotech companies.
And with a stock market theme or, you know, a breakthrough, in this case with weight loss drugs, there's always the danger of investor excitement getting ahead of the fundamentals. So in terms of those two companies, Novo and Lilly, have the valuations become too rich? Are they potentially reaching bubble territory?
So historically, this is something that we see time and time again. And I've been covering biotech stocks since 2001 time, so a long time, over 20 years. And we see individual themes and companies get extremely rich in valuation when something exciting happens like this. The sector can also get extremely rich in valuation and then have a long period of consolidation. That's the nature of the beast. We have ebbs and flows. I think the valuations at the moment are reflecting what I described earlier, which is huge fundamental demand. And toppling an incumbent like Novo and Lilly off the top of who's dominating this market is no mean feat. So I think we are seeing rich valuations, but you could justify it, especially if they get around the supply issue.
And if those stocks are potentially in a bubble, what would potentially pop it?
So in my experience, when a bubble pops, you see a short, sharp reduction in share price. I can't see that happening here. I would imagine these companies would grow into their multiples. They've got high multiples at the moment. You might see a period of share price consolidation, that sort of thing. A bubble bursting would be something really shocking, left field, unpredictable about these drugs that would really hit the share price. At the moment, we're seeing, like I mentioned, so much pent-up demand and also knowledge around new indications, things like sleep apnea, certain kidney diseases, Alzheimer's even, addiction. These are all new possible applications for just the GLP-1 class that I mentioned. So the demand isn't going anywhere. So a bubble bursting, I'm not sure.
However, it's not a part of the market you're investing in at the moment. And is that mainly down to the valuations being too rich?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Novo and Lilly are more pharma in their classification. And the fund that I manage with Marek Pozaczynski is a biotech fund. So the companies that we invest in are the next generation of innovation. And that's where we're seeing the lots of innovation around maybe oral drugs instead of injectables for this space, different mechanisms of action, maybe trying to reduce the side effects, some sort of incremental benefit over what we have now. That's definitely it within our investable arena. Lilly and Novo aren't in our benchmark. Amgen is. That's a possible second generation. Amgen have a possible second generation obesity assets. That's very much in our space. Now, I can predict your next question, what is the difference between pharma and biotech? So it's a really difficult question to answer because traditionally, pharma was the small molecule producing white tablets back in the day. And biotech was more biologics. And what are biologics? It's things you have to inject. So what we're just talking about now, peptides, things you'll ingest if you were to take them through orally. However, the capital markets have classified pharma and biotech in a different way. They've classified it as big pharma, big companies, big market caps, slower growth, the buyers of companies, and biotech is small cap, higher growth, the companies that are generally acquired. And that sort of definition has stuck.
So within biotechnology, how do you ensure that you pay for valuation at a sensible price rather than a potential area that may be overhyped?
Yeah, and this is something that we have a particular emphasis on at IBT. Marek, my colleague, who's my co-fund manager of IBT, has worked in the industry, specifically in business development. And he was brought in to work on the fund to help us with exactly this question: how do you value these companies? When do you walk away? And the way we look at it is we classify the sector in three different pots. We have the early stage, development stage biotech company that you'll be familiar with, the white coats, no revenues, no profits, working in a lab and developing drugs. Now, we value those by basically what's the peak sales potential, and you compare that to the enterprise value. And we would step away when that was sort of 2 to 3 times peak sales. And then we would invest at a lower multiple. The second group of the biotech companies that we invest in are called revenue growth. So these guys have invented a drug, they've got it through the clinic successfully, they've got it past the regulator, it's approved, it's on the market, it's not yet turning a profit. Now, we've seen a lot of M&A in that space. It's a de-risked assets in a way. And biotech have been acquiring up these revenue growth names because they have huge IP expiries coming up in the next few years. Now, biotech generally gets picked up within a range of 5 to 10 times peak sales in that space. And then on the profitable, the third part of the market, so these companies have selling drugs and they've turned a profit, we look at PE multiples. Whether we would think something was expensive would depend on the growth rate within that company. But those are the three ways we value biotech stocks.
So which specific sectors are you finding the best value opportunities in at the moment?
Yes. So something I haven't mentioned so far is another reason why people get very excited about disease areas. And it's when there's genuine innovation and there's a product that's come from nothing, so something from nothing. So with obesity, the treatments at the moment right now for patients historically weren't really cutting it on efficacy, mid-single digit to low double digit at best, whereas these new drugs are seeing 15 to 20%, if not more, weight loss. So that means that this is a new market. So hold that thought. What we try and do at IBT is invest in that, looking for genuine innovation out of universities for diseases that have an unmet medical need. There's another pocket you can invest in, which is displacing an incumbent. So this drug is better than that drug for this reason, and you're not growing the sales, you're not growing the pot, you're just removing one drug and replacing it with something better. What we're trying to do is look at the something from nothing. So there are three areas that we like in the fund: central nervous system, so mental health companies, cancer, oncology companies, and rare diseases. And those three themes, those three areas make up over 70% of our portfolio. Rare diseases we like because it's the fastest growing area of the market, genuine unmet medical need. The populations are smaller, so the clinical trials needed to be done are smaller, and it's cheaper to get to market, and pricing power is very strong. Cancer, you'll know, there's plenty of room there and scope for diseases of unmet medical need. Lots of progress in blood cancers, not so much in solid tumors. So lots going on there too. And then finally, mental health. We're seeing a big need, a big growth area here, especially since the pandemic, for new mechanisms of actions for this area. So that's another area we like.
However, at the moment, I presume that you're finding a lot of compelling value opportunities, given that the biotech sector as a whole, it has been out of favor. I think it's still enduring its worst ever bear market. Could you talk us through why biotech has been out of favour? I mean, I know that obviously interest rates have been rising, which have been a headwind. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, some of the companies in the sector performed very well. And maybe there was a case of the share prices getting carried away at the time. Are those two of the reasons?
I think you've hit nail on the head on some of the factors that have caused the longest bear market in history for this sector. So actually, Marek and I took over just over 3 years ago now. We've just passed our 3-year track record as co-lead fund managers. And when we did take over in 21, we wrote a blog, which we do monthly, talking about how we felt the valuations were looking toppy. That was driven by, like you said, armchair investors, lots of excitement around the vaccine and the treatments of COVID. Valuations got extreme. So we have the ability to tilt the fund into more profitable companies, take off our gearing facility. We're closed-ended fund, so we can gear, we can bring that down. There's lots of tools in our box to make the fund a bit more defensive, which we did. And then the inverse of that we think is true now. We've had a long period, like you said, of depressed valuations. We're not the only ones that think that it's a good opportunity at the moment. Pharma have moved in. They are acquiring. We've had 23 companies since 2020 picked up from our fund. I think there's a real recognition of the valuations coming down and looking interesting. It looks like a really good opportunity right now to us. A lot of companies in the lows of sort of 2022 were trading below the cash position in the bank. It's a really interesting time to be looking at biotech again. As a fund manager, we're doing the opposite of what we did in 21. So we're dipping our toes back in the small mid-cap market where we see value at the expense of the more sort of defensive names within the fund. So it's a great opportunity for us to kind of capture some of the potential returns ahead of us on a macro level. The first kind of sell-off after the peaks in 21, we think were driven by valuations were just too high and there was a profit-taking sell-off. The next leg down, however, we believe was because of the rising interest rate environment. And there've been some sell-side analysis historically that's shown it's not so much the interest rate level, but the rate of rising interest rates that drive the sell-off. And then the inverse of that's true. If you have aggressive reduction in rates, you get often a boom in these long-dated assets such as biotech. And so we're hoping that as we get a more normalized rate interest rate environment, we're going to get a more normalized biotech environment and it can go back to stock picking again.
Of course, it's part of the territory of investing in biotech. You know, it has cycles and it is a volatile area. And that's why it's important for investors to think long term and be sufficiently diversified, with, you know, biotech being more of a satellite than a core holding. For the investment trust that you manage, how do you manage risk?
So it is a risky sector. Things can blow up in our industry. If you have a company that has one asset, it has a phase three trial, and that phase three trial is negative, you can see percentage drops of 80% down to their cash position or what have you. So how do we mitigate that? At IBT, what we do is our day job, if you like, is talking to our companies a lot. Most often it's calls to the US because most of our investments are based in the US. So in the afternoon, finding out when their news flow is, when are you going to report these data out? When is the approval expected for this drug, et cetera? So that's our day job. And we reduce our exposure in the fund into those what we call binary events. And that way we can preserve capital. And in a way, we would rather miss out on the upside on that event, buy it back, de-risked, than take that sort of capital risk going into the event. Inherently, people are much more optimistic going into phase three trials. Investors kind of get behind it. The sell side writes notes saying, hey guys, you've got this event coming up. You could make upside 50%, downside 30%, or whatever it is. And it gets people excited and they want to have exposure. We want to try and do the opposite of that. So that's one way of mitigating company risk. Then I've mentioned already, there's sort of systemic risk, interest rates, macro, valuations getting excited and toppy. We manage the fund on a top-down basis, so we can gear the fund. We have a just over £50 million facility, a loan facility, if you like, that we can dip our toes into if we think things are oversold, and then we can reduce that gearing if we think things are looking healthy again. We can tilt the fund into more stable, profitable companies if we think the macro environment looks a bit scary, and then the inverse of that's true. So all of these tools in our toolbox to try, and our goal is to outperform the benchmark, the Nasdaq Biotech Index, that's our mandate. And as at to the end of March 24, we've outperformed over 1, 3, 5, and 10 years our benchmark. So something's working.
You mentioned earlier about there being a lot of M&A activity at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think you said there was 23 companies that have been subject to a bid. Yeah. So how many companies do you invest in overall, and how often do you make changes to the investment trust?
Yeah, so at the moment we have circa 70 names in the quoted portfolio. That's quite a large number. And just to back up why that is, I mentioned that we're sort of tilting more into this mid-cap end of the market. Inherently, that is going to increase the tail. What we're not going to do is have massive positions in these companies. These are higher risk companies. We're going to have smaller positions. And therefore, the number of companies in the quoted portfolio is going to go up. So yeah, that's one way of kind of mitigating risk, is having a longer N, a longer tail.
My thanks to Elsa, and thank you for listening to this episode of On the Money. If you enjoyed it, please follow the show in your podcast app and do tell a friend about it. If you get a chance, leave us a review or a rating in your podcast app too. You can join the conversation, ask questions, and tell us what you'd like to talk about via email on otm@ii.co.uk. And in the meantime, you can find more information and practical pointers on how to get the most out of your investments on the Interactive Investor website at ii.co.uk. And I'll see you next week.